back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, nobody will remember your salary or how busy you were or how many hours you worked, but they will remember that Guy Haberman was on the Pac-12 Network and is now on the Big Ten Network. He joins us now to talk about his week one matchup, Oregon-Idaho. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, John. Good to talk to you, man.
Are you beginning your week one prep, or how does that work? You get in rhythm. What's the rhythm for a broadcaster when you get a game?
Yeah, I mean, week one's definitely different just because you have so much time, so you try and work ahead a little. But yeah, I am. I was actually, last week I went to L.A. to see USC because that's who Yogi and I and Rhett Lewis, who's our sideline reporter. We have them week two, but week one we have Oregon. So last Wednesday I came up and I hit the brand new Portland airport and went and saw the Ducks. So for me, it's, you know, I've already, before we get a two deep, which, you know, usually comes out, I guess, the week of the game, I try to build my own. And that means talking to the sports information directors the week before the game, or in this case, 2 weeks ago. I went over it with Nate Kruger at Oregon. I talked to the Idaho sports information director today and just try to get some broad strokes and some specifics in terms of just who plays or who will play. Or, you know, these early weeks are a little more challenging just because so many guys potentially can play. But so that's kind of the big picture, and just try to get things organized on my spotting board in terms of who's going to play. And then I can go back and start diving in. But I've had, you know, I'd say probably for 2 months, I've had an article, an RSS feed set up where I'm getting every Oregon story that happens, any Oregon video that goes out. I've got it. I got it. It's refreshing every 15 minutes on my computer with every other Big Ten school. So, you know, just trying to keep a general working knowledge going. So you're not trying, it's not about cramming, although every week it is, you kind of do a little more cramming. But for me, the cramming mostly is making sure that I can try and identify the players very quickly. Because the faster during a game as the play-by-play person, I can identify the guy who caught the ball, the person who is returning the punt, the person who made the tackle. The faster I can do that, the faster I can get to my analyst. And the faster the analyst gets in, the faster sort of I get the ball back, so to speak, to set up the next play. Or just the more time we have to play with, because there's so little time between plays. So that's, I do spend a fair amount of time on that too. So
yeah,
we could talk for a long time, John, about the mechanics of all this. I enjoy talking about it, but
the Big Sky Conference,
it takes a lot of explaining.
The Big Sky Conference teams need these games, like Idaho, Idaho State, Portland State, that will all open against teams that were formerly all in the Pac-12. They need these games. These games support not just the football program, but the entire athletic department. I kind of wonder, Guy, and maybe this is a conversation you can have as the second half kind of unfolds there at Autzen Stadium. I just kind of wonder about the future of those types of games because, you know, if there is a super conference in the future, I wonder if we'll see Big Sky teams able to get those games, and or will they be preseason games or scrimmage games? I don't know. I don't know what the future of it is, but that is a very important football game that you're going to be calling, because Oregon's going to get a chance to, you know, get guys work and should win that game going away. And Idaho, they need the check and they need to stay healthy in that game.
Yeah, I mean, they're a preseason top 10 FCS team, so health does matter a lot to them. And you know, making sure that you come out of that game understanding they've got a whole thing to chase, right? Which is the FCS playoffs, and they've got a good team, and they've got a good defense, and they've got a quarterback who was on their roster last year. He wasn't the starter; their starter's at Oregon State right now from last year. But They lost some guys in the portal. But you're right. I mean, when you de-emphasize the need to go undefeated in order to participate for a championship, then you also reduce the appetite to play a game, probably like this, right? And every game that's on television is it's a money making endeavor, you know, the more great games you can have, the more people that will watch. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably like everybody, all of us, who came up in some variation of a world of college football where these games were a regular thing. I think everybody involved with college football on that side of it is eyes wide open to that real possibility. And it's happened to Idaho before. Remember, Idaho and Oregon, you know better than me, but they were in the same league for a period of time, right, up until the Pac-8 occurred. But populations were changing very rapidly in your part of the country, and they were not changing as rapidly or growing as quickly in the part of the country where Idaho is, and they just could not keep up. But, you know, a constant state of change is kind of the status quo in college football.
Guy Haberman, Big Ten Network, is with us. A lot of hype around Oregon and Dan Lanning. You were there in Indianapolis at Big Ten Media Day, kind of where it kind of got an uptick, a real uptick. What is going on with that? Why do you think it became such a tidal wave of attention for Oregon and Dan Lanning?
Well, two reasons. One, that's the way Oregon wants it. And, you know, Oregon has a blowhorn when Oregon speaks. Oregon knows how to get everybody's attention, whether it's the duck in the river or the team out west. You know, Oregon understands how to get people's attention. So that's number one. And number two, they're legitimately one of the best teams in the country. They're on the short list of teams that should be able to win the national championship. You know, one area where NIL benefits college sports is that I think we come into a year with so many more household names when you have a sixth-year quarterback or a fifth-year quarterback and he's able to go from Oklahoma to Oregon, and it just makes the world smaller in a good way. You know, I think college basketball really will benefit from it, but we'll see. It'll be interesting. Like, when all the players who had the free COVID year have moved on from college football, if we see the same level of movement. But I think it's those two things. And why not Oregon this year? I mean, if you're thinking about winning a national championship, I don't think you can think, oh, well, this is their first year in the Big Ten, so let them ease into it. Or, you know, this is the first year of the 12-team playoff, we'll see. I mean, how many times do you get to follow up a quarterback like Bo Nix with a quarterback like Dylan Gabriel? How many times are you just going to roll out two tackles like this and a defense with this much experience and a wide receiving core this talented? And I know they'll recruit well and they'll continue to replenish and they're big and they'll stay big and all that stuff. But when you have a quarterback as good as this guy, it just and a team as physically ready, I think, for championship level football as the bodies on this team look like they are. Well, this is what it's like being a championship team. Oregon likes putting the target on its back. They're not afraid to do it. But even without all of the extra stuff, the target, they'd be one of the handful of teams with a championship target on their back. I mean, they are coming in as one of the tentpole programs in the Big Ten. That says a lot about where they are.
Are you at all concerned that Dan Lanning lost to Kalen DeBoer three times, lost to Jonathan Smith, lost to Kirby Smart, or do you just kind of chalk that up as, hey, that stuff's going to happen, those guys are good coaches?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not. I'm around the 49ers a lot here in the Bay Area. Kyle Shanahan has, I think he's beaten Sean McVay like seven straight times. Nobody says Sean McVay's not a fantastic football coach. And I watched those games. Like, I saw how thin, particularly the Washington games, the margins were. Are there things, as he becomes more experienced, maybe in the margins that Dan Lanning will do? I love that after, you know, we had the first half where he went for it on the in the red zone, tried to score touchdowns. I loved it after he had a game where he tried to go for it several times. He said, yeah, I don't remember exactly of the three, but he was like, yeah, one of those I want back, or two of those, but not the other one. Here's why I did the other one. Watching a Dan Lanning practice is a very impressive event. He knows what he's doing. So it doesn't concern me in the slightest, the record against the best. I mean, you know, I think he's got everything it takes to get over the top.
How much urgency is there at Oregon? And I'm just going to throw a couple things at you. You know, you talk about this quarterback, you know, how often will you have a quarterback like this? You had Bo Nix, now you have Dylan Gabriel. And, you know, Oregon may replace that with another great quarterback next year. But you're right, there's an opportunity, there's a window here. And then you've got Phil Knight, 87, 88 years old this season. And there's some pressure there, even if no one will say it. But is there a window here in your mind that Oregon has got to try to get through in the next couple years? Or is that putting too much into it?
I mean, I think you would probably know you would know the institutional kind of urgency better than me. But I just, it's hard. I don't want to overstate it, because maybe Dante Moore, like, that may be the next guy. And if that is, that's awesome. And they're going to keep recruiting, and they're going to be really talented. And sometimes, as you know, the team that on paper looks like the best team isn't the version of your team that wins the whole thing. Mm. You know, I think the Chiefs won a Super Bowl probably with a team that wasn't as good as their team that lost the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's like you just got to be around the ball, and I think Oregon will remain around the ball. In this 12-team playoff, who knows, and maybe it'll be 14 in a few years, who knows what kind of variants we're going to introduce. But all of that said, there should be some urgency. I mean, again, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, one of the biggest. I had breakfast with Nick Aliotti the other day in Eugene, and he said, I'm sure he said it to you, it's the biggest Oregon team he's ever seen. So, you know, sometimes it's, and I, you know, the other thing is, and I don't know if this is so much a college football thing, I'm kind of shooting from the hip now on this thought, but you definitely see it in the NFL, but I think it applies in college. If you can get that, if a coach can get a championship early in his tenure, and it's not going to mean that Dan Lanning's not under the usual amount of pressure, but I think if you get that, when you get that first one in the first 3, 4 years, 5 years of your career, I gotta think it has a really positive effect on everything, on how you recruit, your comfort level with your job, the whole thing, your standing. You know, you get a championship and all of a sudden, not that there's much question now that Oregon is among the top tier in college football, but now you become one of the 3 or 4 biggest programs in the country. Especially when you retain your coach after winning a championship. So I just think it doesn't mean they can't win it the next year or in 3 years or whatever. Maybe they can do both. But if you can get that first one early, I do think it probably opens up some pretty special doors.
I think fans make a lot of, you know, Bo Nix named starter today in Denver. But, Guy, how does that help a program when your guy comes in, kind of resurrects himself, stabilizes himself, gets drafted in the first round, and now is going to be a starter for an NFL team in his rookie season?
Yeah, I watched the Broncos on Sunday night. I saw Bo Nix smiling a whole heck of a lot than I remember him smiling during a game the first year he showed up in Eugene, right? I mean, that was a big part of it, was just getting him to relax, getting him to chill out a little bit, not squeeze so tightly, and they did it. You know, it's not just that you said it, right? It's not just that they developed a first-round quarterback. It's that they developed a first-round quarterback after it had looked like maybe he wasn't going to live up to the hype. That's really special. And to me, Dante Moore is a – now, Dante, you know, he had a very different experience at UCLA than all the stuff that Bo Nix – it's not nearly – his story is at a different point than Bo's was when he showed up. But I'm just thinking about Dante Moore a lot, about like what, how special could this be for him to back up Dylan Gabriel this year, have a special team, not have everything on his shoulders, and then just develop kind of Packers light, Jordan Love, and then step into it next year really with a full grasp of everything. That would be an amazing thing for him, and he could play 1 year and be great and be a top five pick, or he could come back again and make NIL money and then be a top five pick. You know, so you just start thinking about kind of the way players could potentially view your program in a sport where there's so much movement that maybe you're a place to just be and develop. That is, you know, that's pretty, I would say that's invaluable in this era.
Guy Haberman, Big Ten Network, is with us. I'm going to cut you loose, but you've been around the Niners. The Brandon Ayuk situation, we have talked about this before, but are you surprised about how this is unfolding, or do you kind of nod and go, this makes sense?
I mean, it kind of makes sense, but yes, I'm surprised it's gone this long. The 49ers, for people that follow them, took a long time to sign Nick Bosa last year, took a long time to sign Deebo Samuel the year before. Both of those players said it affected them going into the season, and so you thought they'd want to avoid that. But the 49ers also have some, you know, a lot of very expensive players, and they've got a price, and they don't like to lose quote-unquote negotiations. I think they kind of lost the Nick Bosa negotiation last year. Although in the end, do you really lose if you end up with one of the best players in the league? So, yeah, it's been weirder than I thought. I didn't think it would. They didn't think. You know, there was a period of time early in the offseason where the deal was almost done. I don't know if you saw the interview Brandon Ayuk did with the Pivot podcast a month or so ago, but he said he was picking out his suit for the for the signing photos. So, yeah, it's been weird. It's been very – it is as weird or even more weird than – as weird as it appears, that's as weird as it is.
Do they have a window? Do the Niners have a window that they need to win, and it's got a year or two or three? Or what do you make of their opportunity right now?
Yeah, they do, but I would say the window, you know, I think there's a lot of talk of kind of them being the last dance Chicago Bulls, right? But if your quarterback's good and he's in his 20s, your window stays open. And Nick Bosa's still young, and Brandon Ayuk would still be young. You know, he's 5 years till he's 30. That's pretty young. That's the type of guy you pay. They still have some really good players on defense. So, yes, this is a great shot. Last year was a great shot. 2019 was a great shot. But if it turns out that Brock Purdy's a top 10 quarterback, then the window stays open.
How do they gauge what to pay him with the market being so out of control? And if we're just being real, I kind of look at him and I go, gosh, he's got a lot of weapons. Yeah, a lot of it is him, and they're better with him, but can you afford to pay him? Can you make him a $55 or $60 million a year guy?
Yeah, I mean, if you think he's a top 10 or so receiver, he's not a top four receiver, but if you think he's a top 10 or so receiver, which I think he is, the league thinks he is.
Quarterback.
Like Sando does his whole...
yeah.
Oh, you're talking about, yeah.
Purdy. I'm talking about Purdy.
I thought you were talking about Ayuk. Yeah, there's really no middle ground when it comes to quarterback contracts, right? Kirk Cousins has shown that. If you're in the range of a top 15 guy, Jared Goff, you just get paid a lot of money. And if you're a middle-of-the-road guy, you get closer to the top tier than you do the fifth tier. So... you know, I mean, he's going to have to be the exception to the rule, right? And the best players are the exceptions to the rule. But he does have Kyle Shanahan as his coach, and he's the best quarterback Kyle Shanahan's had since Matt Ryan. So he's, you know, he becomes very difficult to replace. Now, do you just go, okay, we can save money and sign Kirk Cousins next year? Well, you can't save money if you're going to sign Kirk Cousins. You don't save money when you sign Kirk Cousins. So, you know, I know everyone has already chalked up his $60 million or $64 million a year contract. I'm not convinced it would take number one quarterback money to sign him. We're talking about a guy who was the last pick 262. Josh Dobbs is making more, three times as much money as Brock Purdy is making this year. Mm. So there may be a sweet spot there where you can pay him generational life-changing money and maybe save a few million bucks. But he's got some stuff to prove. I mean, that's the beauty of this, you know. I looked the other day, John, J.D. Power, you know when you watch car commercials, like J.D. Power and Associates, most reliable vehicle, 10 years running, whatever. Those are three-year studies they do, right, before they award the most reliable. It's a three-year, your Chevy Silverado or whatever it is. This is, you know, 1.5 years of Brock Purdy. So they've got this whole year will make up a very significant chunk of his career's playing time to this point. So it'll go a long way to determining how much money he makes.
Guy Haberman, Big Ten Network. He'll have Idaho at Oregon in week one, August 31st. Guy, thank you for giving us your time. Appreciate you, my friend.
Always great talking to you. I'll see you there, I hope.
There you go. Yeah, I'll see you. I hope I'll see you quite often this season. Guy Haberman, he'll be on the call for the Big Ten Network, Oregon's opener against Idaho. Leave it here.